comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. We're going to put a bright, bright, bright spotlight on it today. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and I thank you for listening and for being a part of Mrs. Green's world. And I honestly cannot believe that I am saying this, but it's almost Earth Day. Thank you, January, February, and March. Where did you go? That was fast. But Earth Day is an important day for the Mrs. Green's World team, and it's a super important day for the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 team this year. They're pulling out all the stops for this Earth Day celebration. I am so not kidding. It's this coming Saturday, and it's part of their 10th anniversary of research and education at Biosphere 2. And I have said this before when I've had the guest I'm going to introduce on the show and other guests from the University of Arizona. It's a wonder. Biosphere 2 is a wonder. It's a treasure. It's a place that you should put on your list to make sure you don't pass it up. And no matter where you are listening from around the country, go to Biosphere 2. You will be so glad you did, and you will thank me. So joining me in studio for this next half hour to tell us all about what's happening is my friend Kevin Bonine, who is the Director of Education and Outreach for the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2. Kevin, I'm talking fast because I have so much that I want you to share with us. It's always great to have you, and yikes, do you have a lot to share? So let's get started.
All right. Thanks so much. So good to be with you again.
Okay. My most important question, it's just trying to be funny, isn't every day Earth Day at Biosphere 2?
That is true. Every day is Earth Day. And, you know, our research program is about understanding how the planet works.
Yes.
And educating people about that and how science works. But April 22nd, Earth Day, is a huge day.
Big
and
deal.
We're pulling out all the stops, like you said.
And you open Biosphere up for the world to see. And anybody who comes, that's how I felt about it. You can really see what's going on there and the important work. So this is a bigger focus than normal. And it is the 10th year celebration, so it's the anniversary, 10-year celebration of Mrs. Green's World also. So this is an important week for us. Talk about some of the thing that's going to go on there. Like, just start with, I know you're going to do food, water, energy nexus. Talk about that. Do you want to start there? Is that a good place to start?
Sure. Well,
all important things.
The 10th anniversary of the University of Arizona running Biosphere 2. This is a big deal, and the university wouldn't be involved there if there wasn't research that could be done there that couldn't be done anywhere else. But then on top of that, we have this opportunity to educate 100,000 people and 10,000 school kids. And food, water, energy, this is a big deal these days. People are talking about how do we make sure that we've got enough food for folks? How do we steward our water resources? How do we produce energy? And how do we do all these things simultaneously? So there's new research going on. There's some new things we're going to unveil on Earth Day that have to do with vertical farm, urban farming, putting solar panels with food production, and thinking about how it makes all those things more efficient. And, you know, that focus and understanding how the planet works, I think that's our ticket to making life high quality for folks going forward.
And everyday people understanding it is critical because it's impacting us whether we acknowledge it or it's in our mindset or our consciousness. Everything you just mentioned is going to become more and more essential and critical for people to know about. And one of the things that I was excited about and continue to get excited about and want to educate people about is we are the only city in the United States that was designated as a city of gastronomy. It is a big deal. It does not mean that we have great restaurants, which we do. It's so much more complex and integrated than that. So you are going to absolutely be showcasing that. Talk to us about that. Our friend Janos is going to be there. Gary Nabhan, all guests on the Mrs. Green's World Show.
That's right. We have a fantastic lineup for the morning so people can learn more about the city of gastronomy. Lots of other exhibits and hands-on things to do in the lawn and a new pollinator garden going in. But starting at 10, we will have Janos Wilder kick off a 10-person speakers panel that will touch on all aspects of food production, the future of food, how do we produce it, how do we distribute it, how do we make sure there's enough for everybody. And we've got some local producers. We've got Jonathan Mabry from the city of Tucson.
Awesome, who really was a big deal.
That's
yes.
Right. He made the city of gastronomy designation happen, the only one in the U.S., like you said. Michael McDonald from the Community Food Bank.
Another cutting-edge food bank spotlight.
And that's right. And connecting to the community, and they have their own gardens and they work with the community in a big, big way. And so I think all of that is the reason why we got the City of Gastronomy designation. And it's also important for our collective future. And there's a lot of science embedded in there that we want to highlight. I mean, Tucson and Southern Arizona is just such a fantastic area that there's so much for us to talk about.
And you and I are dedicated to branding it as that. We want, really, you and I, every time we get together, it's blah, 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 blah. There's so many wonderful things coming, you know, that happen here every day. It's a wonderful place to be and live. You cannot just gloss over the pollinator garden. You said that, but tell us about the pollinator garden. We can't live without those puppies.
That's right. One of the values of Biosphere 2 for education and talking to the public is this idea of nature services or ecosystem services. What are these things that happen out there in the world that we take for granted, that we value, that we don't necessarily pay for? Pollination is one of the big ones. You know, more than a third of our food requires active pollination by animals, you know, birds, insects, bats. So we're going to put in a pollinator garden to highlight that for our visitors, also give them an opportunity to collect data on when things are flowering, what's visiting them, connect into another Tucson-based treasure, the National Phenology Network, which looks at the timing of things like flowering and bird mating and those sorts of things. And so all of that collectively helps connect ecosystem services, how the planet works, food production, and just understanding how we all connect.
And just pressing pause on that thought for a minute, such aberrant weather around the country. Always like to touch on climate change. It is real. And looking at what has happened even here, where things that normally bloom in March or April started in February, and you studying that and watching the patterns and how things are changing. We had the hottest March, I think, in 100 years or something.
On record.
On record ever, period, end of story. So things like watching what's happening with the pollinators. And it's a good time to say for people, I had some wonderful person on the show and said, create a pollinator habitat wherever you live. It can be a bush if you have an apartment, a flowering plant on your balcony. So having one out there will be great. And of course, you're going to study it. So when you say it's going to be like a launch, what'll happen? People can go watch? What can we do?
They can participate. So we have connections with Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. They have a fantastic pollinator garden program.
Another
Sergio
great
Avila will be out
treasure.
There. We're also bringing out some school kids that Michelle Coe and Moses Thompson and Greg Baron Gafford worked with.
Yes.
And we're going to bus them and family members out so they can help teach the public about the value of pollinator gardens. And we've got it all laid out, and the visitors can come and actually put the plants in the ground the day of. And depending on how far we get ahead of time, we may have them help us do a little trenching for our irrigation system as well.
How fun. And think about it, Moses Thompson. I mean, look, I think he, I can't even remember when I went to visit the, Monzo and what he's done. I mean, that would be like a place I would go if anything happens, so we know we could live off everything that they're growing, and they have the tilapia, they have it all. You name it. It's so great. So will Monzo kids be coming, do you know?
I think there will be some Monzo kids and a number of other schools. And we have this new agrivoltaics set up at Biosphere 2 that explicitly connects food, water, and energy.
Agrivoltaics.
It's growing food crops under solar panels. It makes the solar panels more efficient. It reduces the heat islanding effect, and it produces food with less water. And potentially it helps shade farm workers. And these are being piloted at a couple of schools in the Tucson area. So the kids are collecting data to contribute to the data set. And those folks, and like I mentioned, Greg Baron Gafford, he'll be out at Biosphere 2 on Saturday the 22nd to tell people about his work. And some of the U of A students will be there as well.
That's a new term for Mrs. Green. I love it, and I'm going to hashtag it.
We scientists like to throw out some lingo there.
I know, and you just like to throw me that curveball. It's like, what, there's something I didn't know? Okay, I always want to know about live animals. Since the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum is coming, and since you are best friends with Gila Monsters, this is a great draw for kids. I mean, it's a magnet for kids. What kind of things are you going to be having? What kind of animals? What are we going to be seeing out there?
In addition to what Arizona Sonora Desert Museum is bringing, we've got some other animals that people are going to get to release into the habitats. We've got hermit crabs. We've got ladybugs. Desert Museum has, you know, that's, a local treasure, right? Top-rated zoo museum in the country. And they will be out. And one of the species they're going to bring is bats, because we're also partnering with a research lab on campus to talk about the ecosystem services provided by bats, right? All the mosquitoes that they eat, the things that they pollinate. And so there'll be some live bats and some discussion of the value of bats. And Desert Museum is bringing some other species to get
people excited. What do you mean there's going to be live bats? Like, how does that work? Are they going to be like in a cage? Are that you going to release them? How do you bring bats to a party, Kevin? Come on.
Well, one of the experts at the Desert Museum, Robin, she will be handling the animals, and they have very strict protocols about how they keep their animals
safe.
They
really know what they're doing. I know that.
They will not be doing bat free flight.
No animals will be harmed in this presentation of these bats.
They will show them off. They will be in a cage, but I don't think that people will be allowed to handle them in any way.
Very comforting to me.
Yes.
I was not wanting to get on the bat handling line, so I'm okay with that. But there will be, it's a teaching exhibit, so that you're going to be teaching people, because I don't think of bats as pollinators. Are they? They eat bugs.
They're certainly pollinators.
So tell us about that for a minute. We have time.
Well, one of the most important species for people living in this area, and this ties back to City of Gastronomy, in the border region, is the saguaro. And one of the species that pollinates the saguaro is the bat, and they pollinate other plants as well. But in the June timeframe, when it's super hot and dry here, that's when the fruits on the saguaro are available. And the bats are helping to make that resource available, and people living here for thousands of years relied on that.
I had no idea again. Yeah. I mean, I need to be hanging around with you a little bit more, but that's, and I think everybody is so intrigued by bats. We've gone to that under the bridge on Campbell when they come out at night. I mean, there's crowds of people that do that because it's such a phenomenon.
They're an amazing species.
They are an amazing
species.
Yeah. And we need them. And right. We need to make sure that they're helpful. Okay. And then why are you releasing hermit crabs? I mean, I've got a lot of questions. Like, I read that. I'm like, what? Where are you releasing them? Inside the biosphere?
So people will get to release hermit crabs into our ocean. Right? We have the 700,000-gallon research ocean. And for years, we've had an overabundance of algae, more algae than we want. And the hermit crabs, they eat algae. And we released a few thousand a few years ago. On April 1st, we had folks release several thousand as well. And we had an undergraduate student at the university calculate how many hermit crabs we would need to release into our ocean to really tackle the algae problem. She based that on some aquarium tank experiments. And we need like 250,000 hermit crabs. So that might not be the solution to our problem. But by people putting hermit crabs in, they get connected, they get engaged, and they help us tackle this algae in a little bit.
And understand the whole circle of life.
Right.
I read a big article actually in my Rotary magazine that I'm going to show you after the show about an algae problem in Lake Erie. It's really bad when that gets out of control and impacts the whole ecosystem.
Well, some of those kinds of things are, you know, they are the result of things like climate change and change in the timing of movements of different species. And some of it is, you know, related to pollution. And there's just a lot of ways that we can impact ecosystems that we don't necessarily understand. And part of what we all need to do is realize that, but also study it.
And I understand the importance of ladybugs. They're amazing and magic and special. So why are you releasing them? What's the intention there?
Great question. So we do get outbreaks of some pest species that attack the plants inside Biosphere 2. And it's not a place that we've ever done any pesticide spraying.
I was going to say, you're not going to bring in a pesticide company and spray in the biosphere,
right.
Hopefully.
And if you're thinking about a closed system and where does something like a pesticide go, you certainly don't want that getting into your drinking water or into your food in any significant way. And so we bring in biological controls for some of those pests, and ladybugs are a good option.
When I first in this journey learned about Arbaco, and what they do, I mean, it's mind-blowing what they do with when you talk natural controls, and they send, you know, maggots in boxes all over the country, and they put them in, you know, horse manure and all of this stuff, but natural control of those things, because in nature, there is no pesticide spraying. That's what we need to really point out.
Right,
nature controls it.
There's a lot more we can learn and utilize on that front.
Yeah, and the biosphere is, I mean, all of these things, I hope people are getting a picture of the comprehensiveness and the integrated systems approach to all of this, because that's what our biosphere is. So I get that. What do you mean there's going to be divers in the ocean? What are they going to be doing? Placing those hermit crabs around? But it's so exciting to be there. I want to paint a visual picture for people.
That's right. The divers, we have a dedicated group of volunteer divers that come out and help us clean the algae in the ocean. And so they do things like clean the algae off the windows so people can see in from the ocean gallery. They also play games with visitors through the glass. And so, you know, writing back and forth notes to each other, but also playing tic-tac-toe on the glass with the divers in the water. So it's a nice way to sort of expose folks in Southern Arizona to what it's like to be underwater in an ocean, which is not something most folks in Southern Arizona experience.
Right, on a daily basis, that's for sure.
Or ever.
You know, soon, you never know. Well, as soon as those polarites can
melt.
Wait
a few million years. Yeah.
It would be a film before the ocean got to Tucson, right? I don't have to worry about property values at this point.
I don't think you need marine flood insurance.
I don't think we do. That's really a big, but that's also fun. Now, all of the things we mentioned, there's going to be a lot going on inside the biosphere. Are a lot of these things, so the ladybugs are, the bats are, the hermit crabs are, and the planting will be outside, I assume, for mm-hmm. the pollinator garden. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bit, for people that don't know, there's a huge lawn down there, a gorgeous piece of property. Is that where, you're going to have local food trucks, I think? Yes.
We have about six food
trucks. I wouldn't forget about food.
Six food trucks that are planning to come, and we have to make sure that people are happy and comfortable and able to eat good food and get something to drink. We're going to have a beer and wine garden, so there is
another incentive for going.
Some drinks being served. And we have about 40 exhibitors coming out, a spectrum of education groups and Pima County, natural resources group, you know, just all the folks in the community that are either in this space because they're producing these kinds of things that we consume, you know, the food and the energy. We have technicians for sustainability. They do solar installation.
Love
They're
them.
Going to come out. And everybody's bringing some sort of hands-on activity, so people will be engaged. They'll have something to do. And that's, we know from research, that's the way that you get to talk to people in significant ways about these topics, not just handing them a flyer.
And, you know, when you ask me about my participation, because I literally cannot wait to get out there, I'll be out there, and I want to tell everybody I'll be doing Facebook Live. The time will be
Great.
Announced on my Facebook page. That's one of the most fun things that the modern world brings to us, if you ask me. I've been to so many things recently where I just say, you know what? There's other people that can't be here that would want to see it. And you can always see it, pause it, you know, watch it in your time, 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, which is when I catch
right.
up a lot.
Right.
But that's really, so there'll be, I think about kids and why I didn't want a booth is because I want to visit all the other booths and see a lot of these things and be my whirling dervish self. But for kids, this to me is a really spectacular opportunity for a family day. I mean, instead of going to the movies and having popcorn, come and spend a day in a beautiful setting, learning in a fun way. It's like all over it. I wish my grandkids were here because we would have a blast, but
You've hit it on the head. We want to make sure that it's very family-friendly.
It is
stuff
a family
for everybody
day.
To do. It's going to be a great time.
And there's so much. So they can go to things in the biosphere and then come out and have some food and wine, not the kids, and eat, but visit the exhibitors who
right.
are all in these things so passionate about what they're doing
right.
and learning and having great activities. Okay, let's talk about the big muckety-mucks. I think Joaquin would be so okay with me calling him a big muckety-muck. But Ed Bass, who is a major player, supporter, visionary in the biosphere's mere existence, and Joaquin Ruiz, who's the dean of the College of Science at the University of Arizona, what is their role going to be for that day? I know Joaquin is excited about it.
Yeah, so Joaquin is behind making this whole Earth Day event happen. He's the reason why the University of Arizona has Biosphere 2 as a research and
totally.
Education instrument, so extremely visionary.
It's his baby.
One of his other titles is Vice President of Innovation, and this is right up that alley as well. He's the director of Biosphere 2, and he will be speaking about the future of research at Biosphere 2, and Ed Bass is going to make some remarks as well, and like you said, he's been a supporter of this idea, a visionary that helped make Biosphere 2 happen, which you know, is a grand experiment in thinking about how do we go about understanding how the planet works. If you try to recreate it, well, you're going to learn what you don't know, right? And so it's been an extremely valuable research tool for 25 years, which is just amazing. And Ed Bass and Joaquin Ruiz will set up the afternoon science panel discussions. And so we have top experts from the U of A, folks who did work under Columbia, other colleagues around the country coming and talking about food, water, energy, and earth. Those sort of the big four that we're focused on.
Called survival.
Well, and that's right, because the things that we do, right, it can be hard for people to understand the nuances of hydrology or atmospheric sciences or climate models. But when you connect it in a real way to things that are important to them, it makes a lot more sense and they care a lot more. And so we're trying to do a good job at this event of making the science real and legitimate, but talking about it in a way that is accessible to a large audience.
And the thing that I want to ask is, for the panels, all topics that we should all care about, because they're the ones without which we cannot live: food, water, energy, earth. What about the, like, this is a politically correct question, trust me. The level of the presentation, is it going to be science speak, or is it going to be, I don't want to say dumbed down, translated for civilians? Because a lot of times scientists get together and your head spins because there is a language. In any profession, you have all of these acronyms and all this stuff. So is it going to be for the general public to go to those sessions? Are they going to be interested and excited to go to those? Or is it more for an intellectual opportunity?
I think it's very much accessible to the general public.
That's good.
And especially folks that are, curious and inquisitive.
Yes.
And because we do science communication in a big way at Biosphere 2, everybody's cognizant of the need to speak in a way that people can access. So that's certainly front and center in our minds, but we want to also give people a window into the great research that's been done there for a long, long time. Obviously, in a 30-minute panel, you can't hit on everything, but hopefully you can hit the highlights of why do we do this, why do we care, why does it matter, and where are we going in the future, so that we can answer the most important questions.
Get exposure to be thinking about it, because it is something that's impacting us all as we speak. And you kind of mentioned the vertical farm. I mean, you know how excited I am every day in this journey of Mrs. Green. New discoveries, bats as important pollinators for the saguaro, which is what I photograph the most in Sabino Canyon when they bloom. So what about the vertical farm? Because when I learned about that, it was early on, and I so got it, because there are millions of people starving already, and vertical farming for places like New York City, we're going to go up instead of out as there's drought and, extreme climate change. So talk about that again, biosphere cutting edge, getting us ready.
Right. I think it's cutting edge in a number of ways. We have an aquaponics exhibit that is mimicked in school gardens around the city. And so we talked to the public about that. We have the Mars Lunar Greenhouse module that is a partnership with the Controlled Environment Agricultural Center on campus. And then the scientists there are partnering with this company, Civic Farms, that's going to use one of our lungs, the West Lung, for a vertical farm production facility, contracts with vendors like Whole Foods and that sort of thing. So greens grown at Biosphere 2 will be sold in Tucson and in Phoenix, and a portion of their facility will be for cutting-edge research and a portion for outreach. And it's a way to, like you said, produce a lot of food with a small footprint. It uses a heck of a lot less water than other systems. And if you start tinkering with the lights, special LED lights, and having those lights only make the light wavelengths that the plants use and don't waste energy on the wavelengths that the plants don't bother doing anything with, they don't photosynthesize with it, then you can do it for a lot less energy consumption as well. So again, it's that food, water, energy nexus, and how do you feed a lot of people without doing a lot of damage to the planet?
And like I said, it's going to matter more for us in the United States. We're usually the last to feel the big pain and the hurt. But if anybody's connected to world news, I mean, there are big cries for help for what's going on, for droughts all over, especially in Africa. I mean, it's hit.
Right.
So, and this is really an affordable alternative to feed the masses. We just have to figure out how to help our neighbors over there.
Yeah, well, and you hit on it, right? So some of these things that we're looking at with solar panels and food production, water use efficiency, if you get that all working together in a nice package, you can send it off someplace that maybe isn't even connected to the grid, right? And now you have a way to do things in a place that, you know, kind of like cell phones bypassed landlines in much of Africa. You can do the same thing for some of these food production and energy production systems.
It's what's exciting about the future, that we will have solutions. They're already here, and Biosphere 2 is coming up with a lot of them. Think of all the things we covered in this fast talking. It's like, feels like fast pitch. So we have got to cover the pièce de résistance. When I was telling people about being out there at Biosphere, for a lot of my friends, I just had to say Calexico, because they have like a cult following. They really do. Thousands. I saw them at the Hollywood Bowl with my daughter, Katie. And I mean, we were everybody was up on their feet dancing. So how exciting is that? And how did you nail them down?
Well, I mean, how many sort of Southern Arizona treasures have we hit on just in this brief conversation?
And here we have them.
And Calexico is certainly one of them. And I think there's a lot of value in thinking about the connection of arts and sciences for effective communication. And Calexico has been such a great supporter of the community in so many ways, not just producing great music and having snippets of their songs on public radio, but they will be performing at the end of the day. And you know, when you see some of these folks driving around town in their minivan and taking their kids to school, you realize they're real people embedded in our community. And even though they have a global presence and a global stage, they want to support the community and support this great place that we all live in.
So your mission, should you choose to accept it, okay, putting it right out here on the airwaves, is I am still manic depressive that I didn't get a selfie with Al Gore when I was in Denver for the Climate Reality Project. You've got to get Mrs. Green to get in there so I can get a selfie with those people. They're rock stars.
They are rock stars.
And you know that I will be nagging you about that, Kevin. You can count on it. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to get to meet them, because they are just world famous. Mm-hmm. And the thing that you said to tie it back into our community. And also, there's something magical about ending this. There, let's face it, there's a lot of heavy-duty stuff here that we're talking about, our future of the planet. But to end with a celebration of that magnitude, to me, it's a big deal. It's about community and dancing and fun, because we can never forget that. It's what I call the hashtag food for the soul. Okay, we better cover this. How do people get tickets, and is it pricing for kids and seniors and families and adults, or how does the pricing work? Because lots of people are going to hear this and get excited about it. We're going to be promoting it on social media. Tell.
Biosphere2.org is where you can go for all the information about the events and ticket sales.
And it's the number two.
It's the number two. Biosphere2, all scrunched together, .org. And we are selling VIP tickets right now so that people can make sure and have a seat near the stage for the Calexico concert. And they'll also get an annual pass with that VIP ticket,
awesome.
So they can come back whenever they want.
Yes.
And then we also have pricing for just our normal adult admission, student and teacher admission, and children. And under six is free. So it's all laid out, and it's a great deal, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Under six is free.
Yep.
That's really amazing, too, because if there's a bunch of people with families, it becomes an economic decision. And I say, you know, how much it costs to go to the movies, where you sit there and eat bad food, which is what I do when I go to the movies. But this is a day that you can put as a staycation, seriously, to learn and get excited and support local food vendors. I mean, the beat That's goes right. on and hear exciting things.
Yeah, you talked about sort of the seriousness of the day preceded by the fun of Calexico. And I think that hits on something important, that these issues and the science around them and science education and doing well in your science courses and your math courses as a student, those are all ways to open up individual opportunities as well as community opportunities going forward. You need good education. You need a well-trained workforce. You need that curiosity and innovation. And it's all in one big package.
And you know, as an educator, and I know as a former educator, it could be life-changing days for little kids. They could decide on their careers or their field of interest or what this could really be. I'm not being melodramatic. It's a possibility. Yeah. So everybody, biosphere2.org, their Facebook page is awesome, and it has great things every day about world issues and local issues and global climate change issues. So Facebook is Biosphere 2, and again, the number And Twitter, love it. Love your Twitter. It's B, the number 2 science. That's the Twitter handle. And then Instagram, which I'm not as familiar with, is Biosphere 2. And again, the number. Everybody, thank you. Time does fly when you're talking about such amazing things. Please plan to join us. Come find me next week. Ariel Greenwood, meet the feral agrarian in our next Down to Earth show. Nicole White and Leslie Waters from TEP. We've got trees for you. Make it a great green week. Happy Earth Day, everybody.